And I am so broken by it, Eddie. I'm waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm praying for Palestinian children, and I start crying, and I can't look at the videos. I start sobbing. I break down. I cry. It is disturbing me so much. I've never had anything in my life disturb me so much as what's happening to the Palestinian people in the last several weeks. It grieves me. It troubles me.
Assalamu alaikum. Greetings of peace. Thank you guys for tuning in. Get ready, everyone. My next guest is none other than Senior Pastor Rick Wiles from the Flowing Streams Church. Pastor Rick has also his own news TV show. Many of you have been sharing his intriguing, insightful videos with me. Now, before we bring Pastor Rick out and make history here, for those that don't know who he is, let's go ahead and play this video that went viral with Pastor Rick sharing some very important history.
When the Islamic warrior Saladin conquered the Crusaders, mm-hmm. and took control of Jerusalem, all right, he entered into an agreement that the Muslims would protect the Christian churches. And so he appointed two Muslim families. Both of these families had been in Jerusalem for, close to 1,000 years. And each generation has passed down
the key.
The key.
Right.
The physical key. Mr. Judah said that the key he presently has is 800 years old.
It's incredible.
He had another key, but it broke.
And this is a Muslim. I mean,
yes.
Adbi Judah is a Muslim. And he said it's a great honor for a Muslim to hold the key to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is the most important church in Christendom. That's not disrespect. That's,
See, we don't hear this in America. Location. We don't hear, because what we have been told is Christian Americans, you should hate Muslims, you should kill Muslims.
Because they're going to tear down all the churches, yes. and basically just ransack them and everything else. But here we have two families that for nearly 1,000 years have actually been watching over,
yes.
Christian churches.
That's right. So who planted into our minds here in America that we should hate and kill Muslims? Who planted that thought in our head? Because it came into our society after 9/11. Jews, Christians, and Muslims have lived together for centuries.
They were buying and selling. They were trading. They were doing business together. They were building houses next door to each other for centuries.
And it didn't change until the...
This is the Dean Show.
I love you very much. I love all the work that you're doing.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to the Dean Show. The Dean Show.
Pastor Rick, how are you?
I'm doing great, Eddie. That was an old video. Where did you find it?
People have been, you got a lot of Muslim fans. You got a lot of Muslims been sharing your videos with me. I've been sharing it also, and I'm very honored to have you on the program.
Thank you. You know, when I had the pleasure of visiting Jordan 4 times last year, uh-huh. and I would be walking down the streets of various cities, not just Amman, in other cities, and people would come up to me. Often they didn't know my name. They just would say, "I know you. You're the American preacher, or you're the newsman." Sometimes they called me the newsman, and this happened a lot. Sometimes in dinner, I was in a restaurant in Amman, and a gentleman came over. He didn't speak English. He addressed me, wanted to know if he could speak. I had an interpreter with me. And he told me that he was watching our show every day because it was being translated into Arabic. And so there are a lot of people who are translating our videos into Arabic, and we don't even know about it. It's just circulating around the Arab world. So we're very honored, very humbled, and it's nice to know that we have friends throughout the Arab world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's start off with this. In this video, you guys mentioned this important history, and it's really nice seeing it coming from someone such as yourself. And towards the end, you said, who planted that in our heads to hate Muslims? After you just went over this rich, important history, that if anybody, any Christian that sees that, you know, this would, you would believe it would soften your heart, you know, and bring the hearts together rather than apart, this huge division yes. that's happening.
Well, I know the answer, and the answer is Zionists. I did not say Jews. I said Zionists. Because, Eddie, up until, I would say until September 11, 2001, I had never had a negative thought about Muslims or Arabs, and I also didn't have any negative thoughts about Jews. I grew up in a small rural community. You know, this is I'm 70 years old, so this is back, you know, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and to this day I can remember all of the Jewish businessmen in my community. I know the retailers, the doctor, everybody, the jeweler, and we were all friends. When 9/11 came, the American news media was weaponized, and it came at us from every direction that Muslims had invaded America and they were going to kill us. And the American people were very afraid. We were afraid if we met a Muslim on the street, they might pull out a knife and try to chop off our head. And this came at us from every direction. The American people had never had these thoughts ever. I don't recall ever having these kind of thoughts. But after 9/11, it was you could tell there was the propaganda had already been formulated, had been designed, and it was simply being implemented. And it came from every direction, television, the news, it got into the movies and the Hollywood movies, and then it got into the churches. And the churches were told, beware the Muslims. They're coming to America to kill the Christians. You know, I'm sad to tell you, I'm embarrassed to tell you that for a couple years I believed it, because I didn't know what was happening to my country. It took me a couple years to figure out the game plan, and to figure out that we had been told a lie. And there was a massive propaganda campaign underway, and that what happened on 9/11 was not the official narrative was not true. And it was shocking to me. It was shocking that I had to process a lot of stuff about what was happening in my country, and my mind had to process that I had been fed disinformation, lies, propaganda. Somebody was trying to make me and everybody else in my country believe something about other people that wasn't true. Mm-hmm. And then I figured it out. And then after I figured it out, they came after me.
Mm.
Okay.
Wow.
And it wasn't the Muslims. It wasn't the Muslims who were coming after me.
I get it. Yeah. Tell me this. I've heard you once reference the Scofield Bible, and you talk about, if it was a while ago, if you can help me connect the dots here and just give us a brief history. Like you were mentioning, if I remember correctly, something about the Scofield Bible and a certain theology that was being pushed that from there it kicked off what today we have from the Christians who got fed this into the Christian Zionism.
Yes.
This move, is that correct?
Yes. So you have to go back. I mean, I can take the story back into the 1700s, but where it really started to come together was the early 1800s. In the 1830s, there was a man in Ireland, and his name was John Nelson Darby, and he was a young Anglican, Church of England, well, Church of Ireland, an Anglican priest, and he became dissatisfied with the Church of Ireland, and he began holding his own meetings. And eventually he moved to England, and he was in a town called Plymouth. And his meetings, the people who came to his meetings, they got the name the Plymouth Brethren, the Plymouth Brothers, okay? Well, anyhow, Mr. Darby, it's not so much that he invented things, but it was like he was collecting strange religious doctrines that were out on the far, far, far edge of the Christian church, that few Christian leaders took them seriously or even heard of them. They were very strange, extreme ideas. But he kind of picked them up like he was putting flowers in a basket. And then he sewed them together and he made a theology. And I call it Darbyism. It's dispensationalism. I have a name for it, Dipsyism, and it's DPPZ, dispensational, premillennial, pre-tribulation Zionism. And he created this theology, and it really didn't go anywhere. He eventually died around 1880 something, and never really made any success with his little movement. It's interesting, Eddie. I have a lot of books here. These are real books. These are not props. I have about, I don't know, somewhere between 7,000 and 10,000 books, and I buy mostly old books. And Eddie, when you go back, you don't really have to go too far with, I'm talking about Christian books, Christian theology books. You don't have to go back too far, and Zionism disappears. It's not mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. If you had gone to seminaries at a certain time in America, you never heard of Zionism. Somehow it got into the seminaries and the Bible colleges. So Mr. Darby died. Excuse me. He died. He wasn't famous. But a man named Cyrus Scofield came around, and he was a con man. He was a flim-flam man. You know what a flim-flam man is? These are terms. Okay. He was a hustler. He cheated people out of money.
Mm-hmm. Like a charlatan.
A charlatan. And he went to jail. This is back in the 1800s. He was a liar, a cheat.
This is Scofield?
Yes, sir. This was Cyrus Scofield. Mr. Scofield was a less than honorable man. And he did go to jail for cheating people out of money. When he got out of jail, again, this would have been around the 1880s. When he got out of jail, he was introduced to a preacher in St. Louis, Missouri, who knew John Nelson Darby. And somehow, Mr. Scofield instantly became a Christian preacher.
Mm.
He just got out of jail. And suddenly he's an expert on the end of the world. And he started traveling around as a Christian Bible expert. He took on the title Dr. Scofield, a doctor of divinity. Mm-hmm. He never went to college. He never went to seminary. He didn't have any degrees. He was a liar. And on the front page of the Scofield Bible, it says, Dr. Cyrus Scofield. And that was a lie. Well, he came up with this idea taking John Nelson Darby's doctrine and putting it in the Christian Bible. So I have a Bible here. Okay, this is not a Scofield Bible. I've got a Scofield Bible here somewhere. So they were put in as footnotes at the bottom of the page explaining each scripture. So a person reading the scripture would look down at the footnotes and there would be an explanation of what that means. He took John Nelson Darby's ideas and put them in the Bible.
Wow.
All right, so now wait to hear this. Scofield didn't have any money. He was always broke. Somehow, he was given a membership in the Lotus Club of New York, which was a high society private club of very famous people. He couldn't afford the membership. The membership was more than his salary.
Hmm.
You had to be invited. You had to be sponsored. The man who brought him into the club was a powerful lawyer in New York City who was either the president or the vice president of the American Zionist Organization.
Wow.
Okay.
It's starting to come together now.
Yes. And that lawyer is the man who wrote the law that was passed in 1913 that gave us the Federal Reserve Banking Act. The same lawyer. So this lawyer arranged for Mr. Scofield to travel to England, and he got a meeting with the executives of Oxford Publishing at Oxford University. And Mr. Scofield came back to America with a contract from Oxford Publishing and an advance, money. Then another gentleman came on the scene. His name was Arno Gabelin. And he was supposed to be a Christian preacher, but they said he spoke Yiddish so fluently that the Jews of New York thought he was a Jew. Well, he came on board as a paid editor for Mr. Scofield, but Mr. Scofield really didn't have the money to pay this guy. This guy named Gabelin is actually the man who put all of John Nelson Darby's ideas in the Bible. Then Oxford published a Bible over in England, and then Oxford gave away, what I was told, Oxford gave away 1 million copies of the Bible in the early 1900s to get the Bible into Christian churches. That's how Scofield got inside the door of the churches. Then Christian denominations, Bible colleges, seminaries began teaching the Darby doctrine, the Scofield doctrine. And it was designed by Zionists. And it didn't have a lot of impact in the 1920s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. It didn't get a lot of following until you got to 1970s. And there was a book called The Late Great Planet Earth, written by Mr. Hal Lindsey. He's still alive. He's almost 100 years old. And that book sold 40 million copies. And it was Scofieldism. It was Darbyism. It was Zionism, packaged as Christian doctrine.
What's it saying? What are the key teachings in there that differentiate it from the King James Version or any other Bible?
Well, what they teach, hold on. What they teach is that Jesus is going to come back twice. And that's not in the Bible. No Christians ever believe that. But they teach he's going to come back twice. He's going to come back and remove the Christians, take them to heaven. And then there's going to be 7 years of tribulation, of wars and famines and all kinds of bad things happening. And then The Antichrist is going to gather his armies to attack the Jews and Israel. And then Jesus is going to come back again and save the Jews. That's the doctrine.
Hmm. And that's not in the King James or any other Bible. This is specifically, this was, where is this actually in the Scofield Bible? Is this in, how did they interject this and throw this in?
Line by line, these footnotes at the bottom of the pages of the Bible, and they created this Zionist doctrine that eventually took over the Christian churches in America.
I see. That brings me now to another video that goes into what we're talking about, and we can continue on after the audience sees this.
Here in the United States, the Christian Zionist movement, John Hagee, go down the list of them. Perry Stone, Lance Wallnau, Stephen Strang at Charisma. You go down the whole list of Zionist puppets are clapping and cheering for this atrocity. They're delighted.
I mean, this is just so incredibly disingenuous on their part.
Why aren't they crying for peace?
Peacemakers.
Why aren't they calling for peace? Why aren't they negotiating? Why aren't they putting pressure on Israel? You have to stop treating the Palestinians like they're animals. You say you're the children of God, but you treat the Palestinians like they're rats. Why aren't these Christian leaders telling the Jewish Zionists, this is ungodly. You say you're the chosen people of God. You can't behave like this.
I was thinking like, wow, why aren't any Christians or any people of God, you know, who believe in God coming out? And then I see you, I was like, wow, this is very powerful. You're just saying some just common sense. You're asking some common sense questions. Why aren't people calling for peace? And then in the beginning of this video, you mentioned some key figures. Yeah. Are these pastors now who are Christian Zionists that kind of run this movement?
There's some of them. The one gentleman, John Hagee.
To destroy the democracy in this country, they worship death. The Jewish people are.
He is probably the most prominent, and he is the founder of a group called Christians United for Israel. It is a Zionist propaganda operation, and it's not run by Christians. Most of the employees are Israeli Zionists. It's a propaganda operation.
Yeah, John Hagee. I heard so. He's a pastor.
Yes, in San Antonio, Texas.
Have you ever met him?
No, sir.
No. Do you think they know about this, what you're talking about, these facts?
Do they know what?
About this, when we went into now the Scofield, the doctrine, are they aware of what they're doing, that this is not in
Yes, they are aware.
So they're blatantly lying to their congregations?
I'm not going to say particularly Eddie. Let's just say Eddie in general.
Yeah.
In general, without me naming names.
Yes.
I believe that many of the biggest, most influential, powerful Christian Zionists in America are Freemasons.
Mm-hmm.
At the heart of this movement is Freemasonry.
Mm.
You want to know why?
Why?
Because Freemasonry is built on Solomon's Temple.
Mm-hmm.
They believe that Solomon was the first Freemason because he used masonry to build this great temple. And the entire concept of Freemasonry is built around a character named Hiram Abiff. And It's quite complicated to get into what the Masons believe about this man. But at the core of it, the Masons are seeking secret knowledge, hidden, forbidden knowledge. I call it, I don't know how you would describe it, I call it occult, demonic, satanic. Mm-hmm. It's magic. It's forbidden. It's things that you should not know.
Mm.
Things you have no reason to know. evil. They are seeking that knowledge. They believe that knowledge came from Babylon. And when the Jews were captive in Babylon, I believe that they learned the Babylonian secret knowledge. This was knowledge that the Babylonian civilization had acquired going back to, now I don't know with Muslims, we believe that there was a great flood with Noah.
And, yes, and, we believe and, in
so,
this, yes.
All right. So I believe that there was knowledge that was passed down through generations that was not from God. It was from the evil one. And that is the forbidden knowledge. And I believe that knowledge was stored in Babylon. And the Freemasons believe that Solomon found, he acquired that knowledge, and he buried it. It's buried somewhere beneath the rubble of Solomon's temple. Well, mm-hmm. if you believe the Jews, where was Solomon's temple? They would say it was where the Temple Mount is now at in Jerusalem, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So all of these Christian Zionists, like Hagee, they want a third temple for Israel. There is nothing in the Christian Bible that says that the Jews have to build a third temple, but they want one built.
Nothing in the Bible to substantiate that.
This is stuff made up by Schofield and Darby.
Wow. So these are like these now self, they're trying to push prophecies. They're trying to make prophecies for self. It's crazy.
Yes, yes. It's crazy. Now they have control of U.S. foreign policy to make their prophecies come true.
Yeah.
So this hidden knowledge, they believe is still there somewhere beneath the Temple Mount. So what's standing in the way? The Temple Mount.
Mm.
They've got to get rid of the Temple Mount. And who else do they have to get rid of? The Muslims who are guarding the Temple Mount.
Mm.
So they can't build their third temple until they get rid of the Muslims and the Temple Mount. But my belief is this temple, it's a Masonic Freemason temple. I know for a fact through historical research that the Jews have been doing Freemason secret rituals beneath the Temple Mount for quite some time in the tunnels.
This is part of the Temple Institute. They openly talk about this, don't they? Is this connected to the Temple Institute?
The fact is that every few days, archaeologists in Israel are digging up memorabilia.
I don't know if it's the Temple Institute, but I know that, I know going back in the 1800s, there were explorers, there were archaeologists sent by Great Britain, financed by the United Lodge of Great Britain, the mothership mm-hmm. of Freemasonry.
Yeah.
They it was called the Palestine Exploration Fund, and they financed it, and they were looking for the secret knowledge hidden under the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things that they did was hold a Masonic ritual under the temple. So this whole thing is based on Masonry. And a lot of people are dying. A lot of innocent people are dying because there are some radical, to me, they're insane. They're mad. They've lost their humanity. They're willing to kill thousands of children for this cause. And I am so broken by it. Eddie, I'm waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm praying for Palestinian children, and I start crying, and I can't look at the videos. I start sobbing. I break down. I cry. It is disturbing me so much. I've never had anything in my life disturb me so much as what's happening to the Palestinian people in the last several weeks. It grieves me. It troubles me. I don't know what to do. I'm doing everything I can to stop it. I'm doing all that I can do to stop it.
God bless you. God bless you. Hopefully we can do our small part and awaken some hearts, because all it takes is to see those images, to really see that what most people are not seeing. But if they can go and just have a look and put themselves in that situation, I mean, it's horrifying. I'm going to get into some more clips here. I want to get your reaction. I don't know if you've heard of the PBD podcast. He starts off by showing who's the governor here. He shows him a clip. I don't know if you've seen this. When they have Netanyahu, he's pretty much saying that we pretty much got the Americans in our pocket. You know, it's so he shows this clip and they take off from there. And he asks a relevant question. So we'll listen to this question and see how you would answer this.
I have a problem with my allies using me as a card to abuse that get out of jail card. And then eventually this thing can turn around and lead into World War III, because World War I, 90 million people died. 260 million people died. If the third one happens at that trajectory, it's 200 million people. Do you think Netanyahu is kind of using a get-out-of-jail card to do what he wants to do and what he's been wanting to do with Palestine all these years?
Now, look, I don't think, I mean, I think you pointed out, how does they have the best security in the world, and yet this is a massive attack on their civilian population. So my sense is in Israel is that the public is very disenchanted with the government. I think they view it as having been a big problem that this happened. And so I think they're now in a situation where they have to say, okay, you know, you have this group in the Gaza Strip, which, by the way, is not occupied territory. Israel pulled out in 2006.
What are your thoughts?
Well, let's start with the fact that it was the government of Benjamin Netanyahu that strengthened Hamas. And everybody in Israel knows it. Everybody knows that Netanyahu backed Hamas for years. Why? He wanted to divide the Palestinians. He did not want Fatah, the Palestinian Authority, to be powerful. So he wanted to split the Palestinians. So he provided funding and support for Hamas to build them up. Nobody in America will talk about it. But all you have to do is go to the Israeli newspapers and you can read the stories about Netanyahu providing financing to Hamas. So now he pretends that he's been their enemy all along. He hasn't. He's using people. Mr. Netanyahu, the other gentleman was Mr. Governor Ron DeSantis. Did you know who that was? As Ron DeSantis.
Yes.
The governor of Florida, my governor here.
Have you ever met him?
No, I voted for him. I don't know if I would vote for him again. I wouldn't vote for him for president now. He is such a Zionist puppet that I can't support him anymore. He was a good governor, but I don't want him as president of the United States. He belongs to the Zionist lobby. It's plain and simple. They own him. Name one person running for president of the United States who is not owned by the Zionists. Name one person. There's not one person running for president of the United States who is not owned by the Zionists. You can't run for president in this country and be an opponent of Zionism. You can't do it. Mm-hmm. So all of this, again, is propaganda, and the Palestinian people are being systematically removed. Netanyahu, he's got two options. Move out all the Palestinians from Gaza and the West Bank, or kill them. Those are his options. Mm-hmm. I mentioned, you showed that video. I stood next to Netanyahu in Davos, Switzerland. President Trump took me to Davos twice. I went with the White House. I didn't ride in Air Force One with the president. I had to get myself there, but I had a White House badge.
So you met President Trump?
I didn't meet him.
Do you know President Trump?
Nope. I've been to Mar-a-Lago several times. Yeah. I've been 10 to 15 feet away from him, but I've never met him. But the White House took me to Davos, the World Economic Forum, twice. And I had one incident where I was just standing. I was actually waiting on a sandwich. And I heard a commotion, and a door opened up, and Benjamin Netanyahu came into the room and stood right beside my left arm. I mean, I could have put my arm around his shoulder. I mean, his security guards were there. But I got a good look in his eyes. And to me, they were shark eyes. Mm. Dead. Lifeless. I remember coming back telling people, that man, I could imagine him driving a bulldozer. And if his mother was standing in his way and he had to do something with that bulldozer for Zionism, he would drive over top his mother and he would eat a turkey sandwich while he was doing it.
Wow.
That's the coldness I saw in that man's eyes. Mm-hmm. So what is he doing right now? He's carrying out genocide. Eddie, I don't know if you know this. The current line that they're using, the Zionists are saying that the Palestinians are Amalekites.
You must remember what Amalek has done to you, says our Holy Bible. And we do remember, and we are fighting. Our brave troops and combatants who are now in Gaza or around Gaza and in all other regions in Israel are joining this chain of Jewish heroes, a chain that has started 3,000 years ago from Joshua ben Nun until the heroes of 1948, the Six-Day.
Amalek, please let us know. No, because now he's referencing the Bible. The person that you described is soulless, shark eye, this person that can just exterminate 2 million people and go have a turkey sandwich, Now he's actually now referencing the Bible, and this is going over many people's heads, many Christians' heads also, but he's referencing the Bible and he's connecting the Palestinians. Is that so to the Amalekites? Yes. What does that mean?
It's not going over the heads of a lot of Christians. That's what scares me. Because the propaganda that we're getting here now is Netanyahu has declared the Palestinian people to be the ancient Amalekites. The Amalekites in the Old Testament Hebrew Bible were the eternal enemies of the Hebrew Jewish people. Mm-hmm. So in the Old Testament scripture, King David was told to wipe out the Amalekites, including their children. Netanyahu is telling the Israeli soldiers that the Palestinians are the Amalekites. And he quoted the Old Testament scripture from the book of Numbers, and he quoted the verse that says, kill the babies.
Wow.
So now you have these Christian Zionist pastors in America telling their church congregations, the Jews in Israel are fighting the Amalekites. They're saying this on Twitter, on Facebook. They're saying, these are the Amalekites. And look what you have to do. Look what God told the Hebrews to do to the Amalekites. Well, that was like 4,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's not today. Wow. And the Palestinians aren't Amalekites. They're Palestinians. And so Netanyahu is justifying, he's using Old Testament Hebrew scripture to justify modern genocide.
This is unbelievable.
It is.
I'm going to get into this next clip with the governor and get your reaction to this.
Okay.
I don't think it's a question of manipulating America. I think it's, you know, you have the American people, by and large, have affinity for Israel, largely, I think, more from in our Christian community than anything, just based on the history of the Judeo-Christian tradition and how it's informed this country. So I think it is unique in terms of the affinity that our country has for Israel because of the biblical history and people's adherence to the Judeo-Christian tradition.
Yeah, earlier today.
So I want to stick with those affinity towards Israel, biblical history, Judeo. You hear this a lot, the Judeo-Christian history, and this is why the support is coming. What is your reaction to that?
Well, this term Judeo-Christian values, I never heard it until about 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
So this was a phrase that was dropped in. Somebody created this term. Propagandists, and they dropped it into the minds of people, and you started hearing it over and over and over, our Judeo-Christian heritage. And a lot of us were going, what do you mean? America doesn't have a Jewish Christian heritage? But that was the message. America wow. has a Jewish Christian heritage. So the Jews took ownership of America. I mean, that's literally what they're doing. They're saying, hey.
The Zionists?
Yes, the Zionists were claiming ownership of the founding of America. This country has a Judeo-Christian heritage. Well, it doesn't. But it's a propaganda technique. And now it's said so often that nobody questions it. It's mm-hmm. just accepted. And when guys like me say, that's propaganda— then I'm criticized as though I don't know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, Eddie, I've got a long memory, and I can remember a lot of things, and I can remember the way things were before. And I know when certain propaganda messages were dropped into the society. Mm-hmm. But most people don't. Most people don't have a long memory.
Let me get into this next clip here.
In cultures, and that's, I think, what's happened. There's no-go zones in France and in Britain and some of these places. That's not a recipe for success. So I think Europe's going to have a very difficult time with these tensions bubbling up. I think we have the ability to still be smart about what we're doing here in the United States and avoid some of what they've walked themselves into.
I just hope and pray that this thing doesn't get ugly. I know you got three kids. I got four. We, when you think from your kids' perspective, it's a little bit concerning when you're seeing this is not calming down. It's getting worse, and it's like at a bar. It's like, what'd you say? What'd you say? And everybody's like, did you see what he said? And it's just getting more and more and more heated. And we got to kind of figure out a way to bring it down.
I like what Patrick Ben David was saying. We got to figure out a way to calm it down. And I want to address this no-go zones in I think he said France. And I think this is incorrect. What the governor is, with all due respect, this is not true. These no-go zones, Muslims would love. I mean, you can probably, when you're in Jordan and whatnot, they paint this picture as Muslims are barbarians. You go over, they're going to cut your head off. I mean, they'd love for you to come in any neighborhood, come and eat with us, sit with us. You know, you've experienced that, right? I think the Zantis needs to go to Jordan or wherever you were and to see it for himself. I mean, so when they say there's no-go zones and all this other nonsense, but you do have, unfortunately, you do have. And that's, you know, the situation with the apartheid now. You do have IDF soldiers who will come out and they'll testify. This is not, you know, we're not making this up. You have streets there that are used specifically for Zionists, for people who follow not Moses' teachings, but Theodor Herzl, you know, and yes. you cannot go down these streets, and you have two sets of laws, you know, one for people who's Zionists and the right of return only for certain people. So this is injustice.
I'm Israeli Jewish American as well. My partner is Palestinian, and I can do things that he can't do. I can travel quite freely, and even though his mother is a refugee from what is now Israel, he can't pass areas that are off limits to Palestinians. I have excellent rights, I have health, there are cities in Israel being built for Jews only, and also in the West Bank, settlements being built for Israeli Jews only, while Palestinians are hemmed in, unable to build cities, and their homes are being demolished for lack of permits that are almost impossible to get. The Israeli authorities are engaging in forcible transfer, where they remove Palestinian communities in the West Bank to make room for settlements. All of these are part of the root causes of the violence. There's terrible abuses going on. You just have to listen to what people on the ground are telling you and adjust accordingly.
This is what Nelson Mandela also was against, and Jimmy Carter called this apartheid state, etc. So how would you respond to this? I like what Patrick said about we got to have level heads. We got to calm this thing down.
Well, I would say I agree, but the ruling class of America is deliberately doing the opposite. They need the tension. They need the anger. They need the division. The ruling class of America is not trying to calm things down. They're trying to jack things up. They're trying to get people angry at each other. They want us fighting at each other. Eddie, they don't want you and me to do what we're doing right now. Having a civilized conversation between two gentlemen. They yes. don't want it. They want us yelling at each other. Look at the news shows. Look at how they do. Everything is shouting, yelling. Everything that they've done to America in the last 20 years has been to divide us, make us angry, make us afraid. They're doing it to the whole world. Yesterday, it may have been on Monday, Vladimir Putin gave a speech in Russia, and he said the globalists, I don't know what, I think he said the rulers of the West need chaos to stay in power, and that they're doing it to the whole world. I mean, everywhere they're setting the world on fire. They did it with Ukraine. They have it now happening in the Middle East. The next spot will be Asia. They need the world to be in chaos. They need people to be fighting each other. And so we defeat them by doing the opposite of what they want. Don't let them make you angry. Don't let them make you fear other people. Do the opposite of what they're programming you and me to do certain things, to think a certain way, to talk a certain way. Don't give in to it. You mentioned the hospitality of the Arabic people. I was amazed in my trips to Jordan. Strangers would invite me to their home for dinner. I'd start a conversation and they would say, please come over to my dinner. Oh, come over to my house for dinner. Let's continue this conversation. Wonderful people. But you know, the first time I went to a Palestinian area was 2018. I went into Bethlehem. I had been in St. Petersburg, Russia, attending a conference and decided at the last minute to fly to Tel Aviv and attend the Christ at the Checkpoint Conference in Bethlehem, which is held by a group of Palestinian Christians trying to get American Christians to understand what's happening in Palestine. And Eddie, when I told friends that I was going to the West Bank, I had so many well-meaning people who cared about me. And they said, now, Rick, you got to think about this. You're going over there. And they're going to try to behead you.
Wow.
And they were sincere. They were really afraid. They thought my life was in danger. And when I came back and said, no, they were wonderful. They were awesome. I've got new friends. And everywhere I went, I was treated kindly. They were like, that can't be true.
These were the Palestinians there.
Yes, the Palestinians in Bethlehem, in the West Bank. They treated me with such kindness. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask, are you a Christian? Are you Muslim? I didn't. They just were people. They're just people. People for being people. All right. I don't want to put a label on anybody. I just want to accept people for being people. But the ruling class of America wants us to mark everybody, put a label on them, fight with them, argue with them, divide, conquer, don't communicate, separate. Why? Because they stay in power when we're divided. Mm-hmm. And when we refuse to be angry with others, when we refuse to hate, when we refuse to be afraid, they lose power.
Have you heard of Up and Coming? He's been around for a while now, and he's the host of a Christian conservative talk show radio. His name is Charlie Kirk.
Sure.
Have you met him? Do you know him?
No, I know who he is, but I don't know him.
Would you, because I've been in contact with him now, I heard him talking about how he wanted to work together with Muslims. And I get really elated when I hear this. Christians, you know, like yourself, who, you know, want to unify on a common good because you have a lot of with the alphabet movement and other things, yes. You know, the sexualization of the children and so many things that were going on. And he was at that moment, he was on a PBD podcast. And same thing with Patrick McDavid. He's a Christian. He brought us out there and I met him. He's a very nice man. And he was talking about this, and then all of a sudden this broke out, and it's kind of his tone changed and whatnot. And I was like, you know what? He needs someone like you, a mentor. You know, someone, would you be willing to mentor someone like Charlie? I mean, you know, someone who's wise, who has a lot of experience, you know, hopefully this gets to Charlie. And, you know, Charlie Kirk, I think he's in Florida also.
Absolutely.
What advice would you have for Charlie? Someone like Charlie Kirk and the like, because you had people don't understand how I was just when I was in Chicago. This was just a few weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago. We had a young boy, 6 years old, stabbed 26 times, and then when they asked his wife what happened to him, she said he had been listening to. This was his tenant now, the Muslim family, Palestinian. He built them a tree house and everything. So this is the power of words, you know, when you can really put things out there that can soften hearts or harden hearts and make yes. people go into rage. People are already like, you know, at the edge. So anyways, they said that he had been listening to conservative talk radio.
The suspect's wife told detectives he listened to conservative talk radio and thought the mother and son would have people over to attack them.
He apparently had been listening to conservative radio for some time.
Joe listens to conservative talk radio on a regular basis and has been heavily interested in the events that have recently occurred in Israel. She also said he was concerned about the National Day of Jihad and wanted Shaheen and her son to move out.
Is he listening to some of these people who are, you know, pushing people to the edge? And yes. we don't want Charlie yes. to go down that ride or others. So what advice would you have for people like this?
You're talking about the little 6 year old boy that was stabbed to death.
You know about that, do you?
Yes. By the landlord, the man who owned the house.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Yep. So he was probably listening to Sean Hannity Oof. And people like that who are – and Mark Levin and others who are whipping up this anger, Glenn Beck, other people. They're making people angry and afraid. I would say to Charlie to pursue truth and be prepared – that there may be attempts to cut off his money. Mm-hmm. That's what I would say. But if you do right, if your motive is right, it doesn't matter if wealthy people cut off the money. I've had so many threats. I've been doing this, Eddie, for 25 years. I've had so many threats. I've had death threats. I've had all kinds of threats. People have threatened to shut me down, silence me, kill me. You know, I just keep going. I just keep going. And it doesn't, I'm not going to say it doesn't bother me. I take these threats seriously. Mm-hmm. And I've lost, let me tell you, Eddie, I have, since I came out as pro-Palestinian, I've lost so many friends. I've lost donors. I've lost business partners. When I say partners, I mean vendors. Mm-hmm. The Zionists work round the clock to hurt me. They call companies that are doing business with me, and they threaten them.
Wow.
I've lost almost all of my friends among Christian churches and pastors. They don't want to talk to me because they can't understand, how could you be against Israel and for the Palestinians? And I tell them, you misunderstand who and what Israel is.
You are stealing my house.
And if I don't steal it, someone else is going
to
steal it.
No one is allowed to steal it. Yeah.
So if you're a Palestinian and you live in Gaza, you're just stuck.
You're stuck forever. And that's why these people are, like, people from America, they're like, why? You know, that's why you have this mantra, like, oh, they want to die. They raise their kids to be suicide bombers. No, when you're in Gaza, you are born dead. You don't have a life. So that's why these people are giving up their lives to send a message to us. That's why they're doing this. That's the only reason they're doing this, is to send a message to us. Help us. That's all they can do.
And I found out that it wasn't exactly like that. That in order to make this Jewish dream a reality, we had to visit a nightmare on the local population. And there's no way you could have ever created a Jewish state without oppressing and expelling the local population. Jewish Israeli historians have shown without a doubt that the expulsion of the Palestinians was persistent, it was pervasive, it was cruel, it was murderous, and with deliberate attempt. So that's what's called the Nakba in Arabic, the disaster or the catastrophe. There's a law that you cannot deny the Holocaust. But in Israel, you're not allowed to mention the Nakba, even though it was at the very basis of the foundation of the state.
Israel's not a nation. Ancient Israel in the Old Testament, and there are some Orthodox Jews who would agree with me. They will tell you that ancient Israel was not a political state. It was a people, a nation that obeyed God, loved God, and obeyed God. That's Israel. And so I tell people, that thing over there in Palestine is not Israel. It's fake. It's made up. It's man-made. And it's built on blood. I know about Irgun and Lehi and Haganah. I know what they did. I know about the massacres in the 40s. I learned this on my own. And when you try to tell Christians today about it, they can't believe it, because it's like, you're making this up. No, I'm not making up. Let me show you the facts. And one by one, we're winning. We're showing people the facts. And one by one, they're coming. But Charlie Kirk, I would encourage him to pursue truth and be prepared to suffer the consequences for pursuing truth. Truth is free, but it comes with a price. The truth itself is free, but you pay a price for getting it.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice. Hopefully you'll take it. We got a few more minutes. I played this with this term anti-Semitic. I mean, this is ridiculous. I'm not anti-Semitic. You mentioned having the Jewish neighbors, friends down there in your neighborhood, and you had great relationships with, and I've had rabbis on the program.
Until Zionism came about, Jews flourished as distinctly religious Jewish communities, and they weren't massacred. On the contrary, they went to these Arab and Muslim lands to escape persecution from the Crusades, from the Inquisition, and from many other trials and tribulations, and even World War II. The Arab and Muslim lands opened their hearts, opened their lands, and provided a safe haven and a gracious hospitality for the Jewish people. Clearly, we have different religion, and yet, we were accepted in these Muslim and Arab lands. We believe in one God, and we were accepted. We have different ways of serving God, but yet, as I, we were respected, and even the Muslim religion requires of that, of the Muslim people to provide protection and hospitality, and they did carry that out. That's clear. Nobody could refute this.
I had also Israelis, people who are also against this Theodore Herzl movement of Zionism, and it showed how, at the time, you gave a great example when we started off with the program, Jerusalem, when you had Salah ad-Din Ayyubi, and you had Jews and Christian Muslims living together in peace, and this is what we're striving for. And
yes,
instead of mentioning my next clip, I had a Christian on some time ago. And he was somebody also. He was a script writer for the Louder for Krautner show. He actually was with Tommy Robinson writing his theme song. He was somebody who hated Muslims, and he was very famous comedian, actor. And this is a really short clip I want to just show you because it goes into my next question.
Because there's a lot of hate out there. And go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of programming that I've realized has happened in America of the anti-Muslim programming, because we all know there's Pharisees in every religion. There's some bad Muslims, some bad Christians, and bad Jews, yes, everything. But that whole, you know, just the boogeyman that you're referring to, I started realizing that I had more in common with some of these Muslims than I did a lot of these converged Christians, Christian in name only. You know, they're blaspheming. They're saying Eve was transgender and, you know, all this insane stuff. They have a rainbow flag in front, you know, promoting sodomy and stuff. And I'm like, well, that Muslim family is just having a bunch of kids, and they seem like they are very honest people. I'm like, what is going on? Because I used to think that Muslims were the boogeyman. And there are some that are Muslim in name only, as we all know. But it's not – something that really changed my perspective was when a Muslim friend of mine – I heard him say, Jesus, peace be upon him. And I had always thought that you guys hated Jesus, you know, and that was and that blew my mind, because I listened to Ben Shapiro on Joe Rogan talk about how Jesus Christ was a common criminal and was killed for rebelling against Rome, which is this insane statement. And then my Muslim friend would say, Jesus, peace be upon him. And I was like, huh. That kind of made it through the programming.
And that goes into my question. Do you get offended when we say, Jesus, peace be upon him? That, you know, no. When we, you know, no. When I tell you, I'm very proud and excited to say I love Jesus. Obviously, we can get the elephant out of the room. You know the difference. We don't believe he's God. Okay, we can agree to disagree on something. But, I mean, we love him. We love his blessed mother.
I understand. I've tried to tell Christians, Muslims, love and respect Jesus, not as the Son of God as we do, but they love and respect him. But Jews will spit on the ground when you say his name.
That is the godly thing to do. We respect one another.
The godly thing to do is to kill you.
The godly thing is to kill me.
That's right. That's what the Torah says.
The Torah says to kill us.
The Torah says that people who worship idols such as yourself, when there is a Sanhedrin,
to kill us.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what the Torah says.
So we know how the Jewish people feel about Christians, yes? That you discriminate against Christians.
Christians are idol worshippers.
You discriminate
the
against Christians.
The Torah says that Christianity is idol worship.
Let me...
That's you.
I'm a Jewish, and I'm the blessed one. You are the curse. You understand?
Why are you defending the people that will spit when you say Jesus, and then hating the people who say, I love Jesus. It doesn't make sense to me.
That's such a strange relationship. In this video also, he talks about Ben Shapiro. I don't know if you've heard of him, Ben Shapiro.
I call him blaspheming Ben. You know why? Because I went after him a couple years ago. I'm the only Christian that went after him publicly because he said that Jesus was a criminal, a revolutionary who deserved to be crucified.
Wow.
And I went after him and I called him a blasphemer. And now whenever I talk about him, I always call him blaspheming Ben. But do you know somebody who used to work at Breitbart News, which was started by Netanyahu?
It was. Wow. I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Yes. Andrew Breitbart worked closely with Netanyahu to start Breitbart News. But a man who worked at Breitbart News said recently that when he worked at Breitbart, he saw Israeli Mossad agents delivering information to Ben Shapiro to put out in his videos.
Out of this world.
So Shapiro is, whether he's paid or not paid, he is an Israeli intelligence asset. He's an operative. There's one thing I want to add, because I don't. If you got to close, I'll be quiet.
No, go ahead. No. Keep going. Show, yeah, so. I want to just respect your time. Go ahead.
Well, okay. It's your show. I don't want to take over.
Keep
your
going.
Show,
no. Okay? Keep going. I mean, I'm really enjoying talking with you.
Okay. You mentioned earlier anti-Semitism. What is anti-Semitism? I refuse to use the word anymore. Once I figured it out, I don't say it anymore.
Is dissent expressed in the United States against policies of the Israeli government. People here are called anti-Semitic. What is your response to that as an Israeli Jew?
Well, it's a trick. We always use it. When from Europe somebody is criticizing Israel, then we bring up the Holocaust. When in this country people are criticizing Israel, then they are anti-Semitic. And the organization is strong and has a lot of money, and the ties between Israel and the American Jewish establishment are very strong, and they are strong in this country. As you know, they have power, which it's okay. They are talented people, and they have power, money, and media, and other things. And their attitude is Israel, my country, right or wrong, the identification. And they are not ready to hear criticism.
So if you ask the average person, they would say, well, anti-Semitism is the hatred of Jews. Well, let me ask you, if it's anti-Semitism, that means that there's a pro-Semitism, and if there's a pro-Semitism, there is a Semitism. So, Eddie, what is a Semite?
A Semite is somebody from this area.
Is there a race of Semites? Is there a race?
No, there isn't.
That's right. There's no race of people called Semites. You know what?
Unpackage that. So that's Semites. You think of people who are in this geographical location.
Actually, the precise definition is, Semites are people who speak Semitic languages.
Yeah, there you go. From this area, who speak this specific language. So an Arab.
Well, guess what? Arabic is Semitic.
An Arab could be a Semite. You know, is anyone from this area? Palestinians a Semite? Correct.
Yes. So yeah. Arabic is a Semitic language. There's approximately 30 Semitic languages. So when they call me anti-Semitic, does that mean I hate people that speak Semitic languages? See, it's a propaganda term.
Mm.
So we shouldn't even participate in it. It's a propaganda term that was created to confuse people. There's no such thing as a Semitic race. There are Semitic languages, and Arabic is one. Aramaic is a Semitic language. There are 30 plus languages that are called Semitic, but there's no such thing as a Semitic race of people. But they want you to believe that if they call you anti-Semitic, that you're against a race of people. Well, bring me out a Semite. Show me a Semite. I'd like to see one because they can't produce it. But you challenge them on it, and they'll shut up because they know you figured it out. I don't know if you know that modern Hebrew is a reconstructed language. The Zionists, it's been so many thousands of years since anybody spoke Hebrew that nobody in the modern day knew what it sounded like. They had the writings. They knew what it looked like, but they didn't know what it sounded like. So the Zionists reconstructed the language and made it up. I mean, for all we know, they're speaking Klingon. They don't know. These people that are speaking Hebrew have no idea if that's Hebrew. They don't know. They made it up. The state of Israel is made up. It's a made up. You've got European, white, Caucasian Europeans who practice Judaism, who moved to Palestine and displaced the indigenous native Palestinian people. The Israelis are white European colonizers. Now, they practice Judaism, but their race is not, they're not from, look at their skin color, Eddie. Do they look like an Arab? Do they look like a Palestinian? Do they look like the people that live in Palestine? They look like white Europeans. And the reason is they are descendants of the Khazarians, a Khazar, which was an ancient European country. And the king converted to Judaism, and he forced the entire country to officially become Jews. But they were not racially Jews. They adopted Judaism. Khazaria disappeared. But guess what? If you had a map of the old Khazaria Empire and you laid it over top a modern map, guess what country is inside of it? Ukraine. There was talk 10 years ago that the Israelis would abandon Palestine and relocate in Ukraine. We've got Zelensky, a Zionist. How did he become the president of Ukraine? You've got two wars right now being run by Zionists. And America's financing both of them. Is Ukraine being depopulated? Are they depopulating Ukraine to make room for a transplant of Zionists from Palestine to Ukraine? When I first heard this idea, I thought it was so far out it couldn't be real. But now I think there's a real high likelihood this is happening. The Zionists cannot survive this war in the Middle East. They can't survive this. Now, they may win. They may win the war, but they can't survive. Here's why I'm saying this. For them to win, they have to be so brutal, so savage, that the whole world will see them killing millions of people, including children. The world will turn against them. They will be hated. If they carry out their agenda, they will be hated around the world. They know it. What's happening, Eddie, is the West, which is primarily the United States and Israel, are in this war, and they have to win. It's not about Gaza. It's not about Hamas. It's now about the domination of Zionism. And if they lose, America becomes a third world nation, and Zionism is
put out of business. If they win, all of humanity will become Palestinians and the world will become a refugee camp. It's all or nothing.
Tell me, what in the last minute we have, what is your advice now to just human beings in general, people whose hearts are open, people who don't want to be spending, what is it, like almost $4 billion a year? Is this good for America? Is this good for any God-conscious person, someone who says, I believe in God? You know, is there any good in this? And how can people make a change? You know, what can they do?
Well, Eddie, if you're asking me a question, I have to give you my Christian answer, if you may allow me. My Christian answer is we are moving quickly to the end of time. Mm. And Almighty God is going to shut down this world. The first time he did it was at Noah's flood. And he said that mankind thought about wickedness and evil all day long. It's the only thing that they did was evil and wicked. And the world was filled with bloodshed. We're back to the same place. Jesus said that his return to earth would be as it was in the days of Noah. What was going on at the time of Noah? The mankind was wicked. The world was filled with blood. I believe with all my heart that Jesus Christ is coming back soon.
You know, we believe all as Muslims in the second coming of Jesus, peace be upon him. Did you know that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead. Well, you're sorry.
So I believe he's coming back. I believe he's coming back. And so every single person has to have their heart ready and prepared for that moment. Some of us may not get through this physically. We may perish in these wars. You mentioned a figure earlier, maybe 200 million, or maybe, no, that maybe it was a person on one of the podcast shows you shared. I'm thinking it's more like a billion people could die in this war. We don't know who's going to make it, who's going to survive. But if your soul is right with Almighty God, that's the only thing that matters. And I am telling people, make sure everything in your life is right. And if you're doing anything wrong, stop it. If you have bitterness, unforgiveness towards any people, make it right. We are approaching a catastrophe in the world. And I wrote a book about it called Final Day. Mm-hmm. And it refutes Darbyism, Schofieldism. It refutes it. And
what's the name of that book?
Final Day, F-I-N-A-L, the last day, Final Day. It's on Amazon, Final Day. It refutes Darbyism and Schofieldism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I encourage people to read it. And it will explain to them what I believe about the last days.
You think this will definitely help to eliminate the programming that's affected many Christians who over the years have been affected by this this movement?
Yes. We could see, all right, one of two things is going to happen here. I'm going to go back to what I just said. Either we're going to witness the end of Zionism as we know it. We're going to witness the end of Zionism, or Zionism is going to take over the world, including the Muslim world. One or the other. If it's the second one, then it means that Zionism is what the Bible calls the beast, the beast system that rules the world. Imagine somebody like Netanyahu in control of artificial intelligence.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Rick, God bless you. Thank you very much for.
I've enjoyed this.
I enjoyed talking with you. God willing, we can do it again next time in person. as we say, God willing, God bless you. Thank you so much. And hopefully we make in history, we could be an example for others that we could, you could see a Muslim Christian come together. We can talk, we can go ahead and share some good knowledge together. And I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I've been honored. Thank you very much. You've been a gracious host. And when you're in Florida, come over and see us. I'd love to fellowship with you. We'll take you to dinner and, Let's continue our conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
Thank you, sir.
Peace be with you. Thank you. I cannot leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you're tuning in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeanshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.